Brad Sesmatch Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's a great Monday. Thanks for being with us. Pumped, psyched, geeked, ready to get after it. New week. U of A is on to the Sweet 16, as they should be. This is not a surprise. This isn't a big story to me. We're supposed to do this. We're supposed to be sitting here next Monday saying, now they're in the Final Four. Supposed to be. So this is, it's a lead story, obviously, but to me, it's the first weekend. You don't want to be Duke and go home after the first weekend, right? You don't want to be Villanova and go home after the first weekend, right? I mean, you're U of A. You're supposed to have won. It's not that hard. I thought St. Mary's played well. I thought that St. Mary's had some tough breaks go against them late in the game. The officials did them no favors at all. Just look at the number of free throws being shot. But Lauri Markkanen continues to show me that. I put a poll up last night on Sports360AZ on Twitter. And this poll was, who should the Suns draft given their current roster? You have to understand, when we put up these polls, it's not just who should they draft, it's with their current roster. And so watching Lauri Markkanen over the weekend and watching Lonzo Ball over the weekend. By the way, any of you that were in the Suns should not be tanking games, come on. Are you hearing yourselves? They should have been tanking 4 weeks ago. I mean, what do you have to show for this? A couple wins 2 weeks back that might have screwed you out of the opportunity to get Lonzo Ball? But on this poll, I threw out there Ball, Markkanen, or Fultz. And, of course, the Kansas fans want me to, renege on that and throw their guy in there. Today's the Wooden Award, and I've got a vote on that. And they've got all 10 of these high-name guys. How do you keep Goss off of there? It's a tough deal. There's some very talented players. But I felt like over the weekend, Markkanen again continued to show, and even more so, that he's becoming more and more of a force that people should be looking at and saying, is he really a ninth pick overall in the draft? Maybe he's a seventh pick. Maybe he's a fifth pick. The Suns aren't going to get the number one pick. Danny Ainge is going to get the number one pick. That's how it's going to go. Nobody's going to catch Brooklyn. But at number two and number three, the Suns. Last night, the Lakers were leading the Cavaliers in the fourth. I was telling Eric this before the show. It was like 6 minutes to go in the game. And the Lakers had the lead, and they were up by like 10. And it's, wow, they're going to screw up, and they're going to win a game. And, of course, they end up getting blown out. So I don't know if they just rolled over like a dog and put their legs in the air and scratched the belly, like the Suns did yesterday in Detroit, which is the smart thing to do. So it was a terrific weekend. Steve Lapis is going to be with us at about 10:50 this morning. Steve Lapis with CBS Sports was the analyst for both U of A games in Salt Lake City, and he will join us on today's show. We'll have news and notes with Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports columnist. Her weekly segment with Paula, that will come up in about 20 minutes. What do you think of the weekend, Eric, at the tournament? What jumped out at you?
I think it picked up steam as we got into the round of 32 games after a pretty uneventful opening round. And I thought U of A played fine. I didn't think they were anything exceptional, but I thought they played well enough to win. And you want to be playing your best basketball now, but you really want to be playing your best basketball in the next 2 weeks.
I thought U of A was not good at all in the first half.
But I think more of that is give St. Mary's credit. I mean, Randy Bennett's a really good basketball coach. He's been doing it a long time. He's beaten a lot of really good teams. They're in the tournament every year. So that didn't necessarily surprise me. I knew eventually U of A's athleticism was going to take over, and it did. But I thought they played okay.
If you watch the first half, though, I'm talking about finishing just layups.
There was not a sense of urgency from U of A in the first half. That was my takeaway.
If they finish,
they looked lethargic.
If they finish like three or four of those layups. But St. Mary's is well coached. Mm-hmm. You're right about Randy. Randy's name has been around the ASU job in the past. I know Randy's name was all over GCU before, and I think they're actually going down the road with him a little bit before Dan came on the radar. I'll sit here today and say that and believe that.
Yeah, he'd be a great fit at Cal.
Randy would?
Yeah.
What about Musselman?
He'd be a great fit at Cal.
But is he going to be there a year or two and move on to the next thing like Mus has done?
Probably.
Look at what Eric's track record is.
Yeah.
He's great. We love Eric. Yep. I love having him on the show, but he's never anywhere longer. He's a total millennial. He's there for like a cup of coffee and that's it. I'm on to the next gig.
But he has value. Everywhere he goes, the teams tend to win.
What do you think of Mike Hopkins going to Washington? Do you see that?
I did. I don't know, really know anything about Mike Hopkins.
He's been at Syracuse forever.
I saw that name. Yeah, I saw that name, and I was just like, I mean, one day it was like, hey, Steve Lavin might be the new coach at Washington. Right. And my initial thought was, okay, well, they have all those great recruits. The only reason they would hire Steve Lavin would be to keep all of those great recruits that are supposedly coming in to UW.
Yeah. Did you see what Jeff Munn wrote on the site over the weekend about GCU?
I did. I mean, I edited it, so hopefully.
Did you?
Hopefully I was the one that read it.
I thought that...
I thought he was dead on right.
I thought his tone was a little much. It felt to me like, let's be honest, Jeff does the play-by-play for Arizona State, for their women's team, which is very good. Charlie had another great season. Jeff has done work at Arizona State. Jeff is a graduate of Arizona State. I felt like as I was reading that, it was taken from the viewpoint of an Arizona State fan. It's not a criticism, but an Arizona State, it's like a GCU fan is always going to say, oh, our program is more than Dan Marley. What are they going to say? They're not objective. Most of them are not. Most fans are just not objective.
As long as the story is accurate, I don't really care if it comes from with an ASU slant or if he does the play. But I mean, as long as what was in there was factual and accurate.
Because people are all worked up about it today.
I don't know. You and I talked on this show. I think the only thing that would get Dan Marley to really start looking about other jobs is if GCU can't get out of the WAC. I totally agree with you. Because, I mean...
They're not going to be able to get out of the WAC in the next two years.
Yeah, but we don't know that. I mean, yes, in the next 2 years.
Next year, they're not going to get out of the WAC. I know that.
But moving forward, if they go to the tournament in the next 2 years, and then there is an opportunity for GCU to get into a better basketball conference, and if they don't run to the table and get there as quickly as they can,
right,
eventually Dan Marley's going to be like, well, it was really neat playing Cal State Bakersfield the first few years and playing in an empty arena at Chicago State, but I'd really like to play on a bigger stage, coach on a bigger stage.
I feel like this job hiring cycle that we're in right now, a coach that's been at Syracuse for 17 years goes all the way up to Seattle, Washington. Okay, does that make any sense at all? This was the guy that was supposed to replace Boeheim. So they bring in a new AD at Syracuse who was at ESPN as a programmer. And does he come in and he says, we're going to change this whole thing up? And so he goes to that job. Oklahoma State's coach doesn't even get off the plane and he accepts the job at Illinois. Illinois sounds like a great job. I don't know. Every year I hear this, or through the years I hear this, well, Illinois is a great job. It's a sleeping giant. Kendall Gill's not walking through the door. Steve Bardot's not walking. Marcus Liberty's not walking through the door.
But I know why he did that.
Because Oklahoma State's not a great job.
Well, because the state of Illinois is a basketball state.
Sure.
The state of Oklahoma is a football state. Oklahoma State will always be a football school. They have a high-profile coach. They do very well. Yes,
Sutton was there.
Yes, the basketball team does well, but the bread and butter for OU and Oklahoma State is football.
Bring in Eddie Sutton.
Illinois isn't really good at any sports right now.
Wow.
So if there was an opportunity, it's true.
Take a shot.
Again, we speak in facts. Tell me the last time the University of Illinois played in a bowl game. A bowl game. 2011, 2012? And that's saying something because the Big Ten, the bottom half of the Big Ten is not good in football. But anyway, I digress.
So let me run this by you then.
It was a surprise that he left.
Is Washington a better job for Dan Marley to go to today than what he presently has at GCU?
Without question.
You really believe that?
Absolutely.
Okay, because?
Better conference.
A better conference.
A pool of great talent in the state of Washington and the surrounding areas.
Okay, but again, go back to the conference. Does he need to have a better pool of talent?
Sure.
Where he is right now, does he need to go get the number one kid out of Seattle? No, he doesn't need to. He doesn't need to. The pressure to win at GCU versus the pressure to win at Washington. Now, Washington's a football school, but there's been great basketball through the
years.
Definitely. Right?
Definitely.
And the pressure in Seattle would be if you don't keep the top kids here in basketball, you know, you can go all the way back to what Jason Terry and down the line of guys that have come out of Seattle.
But I think Dan would be ready for that challenge.
Well, here's where
it's all null and void now because they have a new coach. But I think if a job like that came open, I think he could go to one of those schools and have success.
So let me run this by you. Steve Alford did not deny the Indiana job yesterday.
Nor should he.
And it sounds like there's a boatload of money, and he's got a dad that's over the top that's bringing in his next two big recruits. Okay.
And coaching's great because a year ago, everyone at UCLA wanted him out. Like, God, we need to get rid of Steve Alford. His son stinks. You know, we won 15 games, and now look at what a year does.
Okay, but let me run this by you with Dan. Let's just say next year Dan does not win the WAC tournament. Is the expectation level for him just unrealistic here at GCU?
I think so, because as we've talked about, they haven't won the WAC yet.
Right. So if he doesn't win next year, is he going to look around? Is the president, who was a former basketball coach, going to be uneasy privately? Publicly, they'll say all the right things because that's what they do. But if the UCLA job came open, is Dan Marley somebody that UCLA should call at this point? That's a real stretch in some people's minds. But I think if you look at the jobs that have come open, GCU is a better job than LSU today. How many SEC teams and ACC teams are left, right? I mean, there's some that are still out there, but everybody who makes the South out to be this basketball hotbed, I don't know. We're doing pretty well out here in the West. Gonzaga, Oregon, UCLA, U of A. You know, so is he better off staying out West? And then next year when the next cycle comes, yeah, people should I want my coach pursued. I want people to come after my coach. There's some football to get to today. The AIA made a terrific hire about a half hour ago that's, I think, for those of you that follow high schools, we're going to get into that in a bit. And Tom Brady's jersey has been recovered. And actually, two of them. We'll have that on the other side. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. I'm Brad Sussmat. Steve Lapis, in about a half hour, we'll talk with the CBS analyst who was courtside for both ASU wins, doing the play-by-play, or the color, I should say, of the games with the Wildcats, former Villanova basketball coach. So that's coming up here in a bit. Paula Bovin in about 10 minutes. Those of you that have been watching today, everywhere that I go, it's all about the spy stuff and the wiretapping and what's going on up in Washington, D.C. today and accusations, Dems against Republicans, so on and so forth, around wiretapping. So espionage, it's out there. Dun, dun, dun. And we can tie that into sports. It's not that hard. Tom Brady's stolen Super Bowl jerseys have been found. Now, Donald Trump has gone out of his way to accuse us of being bad people and that it's all of our faults. The ills of society, it's all the media's faults. Their faults. Knock yourself out. Well, Tom Brady's stolen jersey, for those of you that are unaware of this, and how this story went to this level. So we have some video here that we're going to bring you. This is coming from our archives. This is right after the Patriots won the Super Bowl in early February. Tom Brady goes into his locker and into the locker room, and he's searching around for his jersey. So let's check this out.
Did anyone see it? Did you see it?
Thanks, Dave.
Did someone take my jersey?
I put it in my bag. I absolutely 100% put it in my bag.
Someone took it, B.
The security guard brought the jersey and the pads. He said, when he came back in, since we've been in here, he took his jersey off his pads and put it in his bag.
You want to interview right now?
I put it in here.
Put someone at the door and check every one of these meetings.
No, but it was just. If anyone sees eBay,
Okay, so that was the clip from Tom Brady, obviously, as it happened. So today, and this has taken the FBI getting involved in this, and Houston police. Houston is where the Super Bowl was held. So the game-worn jerseys, not just of one Super Bowl of Tom Brady's, but two Super Bowls that have been missing, have been retrieved after the investigation led by the FBI found them in Mexico. And the jerseys were found possession by a member of the Mexican media. So we're thinking that when this took place, they're also being authenticated by authorities, according to the Houston police chief. So our little slice of heaven known as the United States, we've had to get the FBI involved. We've had to get Houston police involved. We've had to put some resources into recovering some football jerseys that are worth a value of $500,000. Pretty crazy, isn't it? And the chief of the Houston police, Chief Art Acevedo, said today, proud Houston at Houston Police Major Offenders Division traced Brady jersey to Mexico. It has been recovered with help of FBI and Mexican authorities. So they actually had to get the Mexican authorities involved in this whole deal. What did the jersey look like? Well, it was blue, it was red, it was silver. What was on it? It was numbers 1 and 2. What else? The name Brady. You can see the police report. You can see people that are sitting around a big table that have probably had numerous meetings on this. What are you working on today, honey? Well, I'm trying to find Tom Brady's jersey.
And there are other reports too, Brad, that this credentialed media member also could have Von Miller's past Super Bowl jersey, which apparently are other jerseys from Von Miller that are missing. So it's a sad situation, but it's really sad for the 99.9% of the people that cover the Super Bowl from a media perspective that have no intention of doing anything else besides just going in there doing their job.
Okay, so
now everyone's going to be under the microscope.
Sure, and we've got to let people know what it's like, though. When you go into a locker room after a game is over, okay, we have to have what they call a credential around our neck. And there's a guy that is sitting there or a lady that's sitting there that if you said, well, I don't have a credential, they would break your ankles and throw you to the turf in a heartbeat. Not really, but I mean, they would prevent you from going in. And so once you go in, there's a whole bunch of people that work for the team. They're known as public relations people. And they are there to monitor, to watch, to assist. But there's only like 3 or 4 of them. And usually what happens is a player of Tom Brady's ilk is always brought into a separate room. And everybody goes into that separate room because they have to hear what Tom Brady has to say. So what that means is the locker room where Brady's jersey would have been, in all likelihood, was empty. Other than there'd be a security guard at the front door, not letting you go in. There would be a few PR people, public relations people. But guys, so you know this, there would be the opportunity, I would believe, for somebody, even though you hate to think that this would actually happen, and it did, that they would walk in there looking like they're doing their job. They would carry a tape recorder with them. They may have a jacket on because he's got to stuff that jersey somewhere. And in this span of maybe it would take him, what, 15, 20 seconds? If he walks in there, Brady's in the other room. There's still people celebrating getting selfies out on the field. Tom is brought in. Tom rips his jersey off to go meet with the media. He's not thinking somebody's going to jack his jersey. So a guy can walk in there with this little credential around his neck. And he can take it and he can get out of there. He's done. He's not covering anything.
Are you a bit surprised there was no security cameras in the locker room?
You know, I don't know that. I've never thought of it that way.
Unless there were security cameras and they just didn't say, and that's how they eventually started tracking this person down.
When we walk into the Cardinals games or any team's games, have you ever asked PR people, hey, are there cameras in here?
Never once.
Do you ever think about it?
Nope.
But are the lockers just sitting there wide open?
Yes.
So I remember when Mark McGwire, I can go back on this one, when Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa were doing the Royd stuff, and everybody's asking him about it, and they want to know what it was that was sitting in their locker. So players, when you walk in, their possessions are sitting there right in front of us. Right in front of us. Now, there's a little safe. In some locker rooms, there's a little safe where they can put their most valuable of valuables. I think through the years, players have learned, don't bring your most valuable of valuables into the locker room. But yeah, this is very unfortunate, but I can see how it happened. Guy's got his cred, okay. Guy gets admitted. It's national. It's worldwide media. The NFL wants everybody. Mexico media is going to roll in here. That's perfect. We're going to do some games down in Mexico. We want our brand spread out. They're going to do a background check on the dude, and away he goes. To your point, there could well have been cameras placed in both locker rooms. Do you know that? Are you just speculating?
No, I'm just speculating.
I mean, it makes sense. And so the great jersey gate is over, at least for now. What is he going to do with these jerseys? What are they really worth? Are they the real ones? Are these knockoffs? I was in China once for, I don't know, like 3 weeks with my wife, and we would drive by markets where there were Charles Barkley jerseys hanging, and it would say authentic. Come on, these aren't authentic.
But my friend buys a bunch of his jerseys from China, and you just looking at them casually, you would never guess that they're
knockoffs.
No, that's
right.
They're pretty well done.
No, that's right. They're the knockoffs. All right, Paula Bovin's next. News and notes, AZ Central Sports columnist. That is on the other side, sports360az.com. Steve Lapis in about 20. I'm Brad Sussmad.
Giving you the inside slant on the weekend's biggest stories. It's time for News and Notes with AZ Central sports columnist Paula Bovin. Here again, Brad Sussmad.
Here is Paula Bovin now, News and Notes, AZ Central sports columnist for about another 6 weeks, right?
That's correct, yes.
They're not trying to get you to stick through 2030?
No, I think they're going to boot me out the door in about...
Get out of here. So. I saw some great Paula Bovin social media this morning where she forgot her pass and was actually working out in front of Cronkite in the dark this morning, which is awesome.
I know. It was me and a couple of very nice, kind gentlemen who were apparently homeless, but they were nice. We had a nice conversation, so yeah.
There you go. Are you going to San Jose?
I am, yes. Uh-huh. I'm excited. Should be fun.
I don't think much has changed in the last week since we spoke about them. They did what they were supposed to do. St. Mary's put up a good fight. They have the only double-digit seed remaining in the tournament. Now, whether they were seeded too low or not, Xavier, we don't know that. But the path leads to the Elite Eight at minimum. Of course, I'm beyond minimum. I'm of the expectation they should be here in Glendale. What do you think of their run so far?
You know, I agree with your pass. I mean, things are falling in place for them. I am of the mindset St. Mary's, and I've actually watched them a lot this season, are a very good team. And so they're a tough matchup. We both know Randy Bennett is a great coach, good local guy, and had him really well prepared. I think Arizona will need to play better next week. They cannot, or Thursday, they can't start out slow. I thought that really hurt them. Sometimes I think, it's hard to find fault with this team, but sometimes I think there's a little bit of a leadership issue just because, you know, they're young. They don't have some of those strong voices they've had in the past. I think that was part of it, but, you know, they are really talented, and I think considering what they have coming up, Xavier, and then maybe someone like Gonzaga, who we know how that went last time, but it's still a good matchup. So, yeah.
I think the bigs of U of A are what got them through the last game because their guards weren't good, as you pointed out. They miss a lot of easy shots. Markkanen continues to me. I've heard from some NBA guys that he was around 7 or 8 in this year's class. That was before the tournament started. Mm-hmm. Okay, these are the NBA scout guys. You know, I'm sitting here watching the Suns, and because they've screwed things up a little bit in terms of winning some games, they're not going to get one. They're not going to catch Brooklyn, which means Danny Ainge and Boston will have number one. I don't know if they're going to catch the Lakers. The Lakers last night were leading by 6 with 5 minutes to go, and they ended up getting blown out. They figured out we need to tank and roll over and let them scratch our bellies. you know, Paula, the Suns, if they don't get a shot at Fultz or Ball, you look at Markkanen, okay, and I'm not saying that he's at three right now, but you look at what they have in place on the team. If they had a guy at four that they plug in, not who they presently have on their roster, Marquese Chris, is he a four? Could he be a three? Is he better than TJ Warren? You know where I'm going with this. It's
sure.
You don't rule him out if you're the Suns. They may not get three or four. They may get six or seven, and he's going to be sitting there. I think you've got to start considering him if you're the Suns.
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, the things we've talked about before, how young he is and how much growth he has. I mean, I'm pretty impressed with him now and his maturity. And, you know, he's getting to be stronger and stronger, you know, under the basket. We all know he can hit a really pretty three. And so he has a really interesting game. And, I would have no problem with that. I mean, if the Suns are fully committed to, you know, being young and growing from there, he could be part of that puzzle. I hope they get a better draft pick, frankly, but I don't know if that's going
to
happen.
Okay, if you had to choose between Lonzo Ball and anybody else
Lonzo
in the field
Ball.
This year. Yeah.
Lonzo
I mean,
Ball.
It's stunning how good he is. Just, I'm going to date you and I on this one. We both grew up with Magic and Bird.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same deal that when he plays, you have to be there to watch.
There were some, like, stretches yesterday. I'm watching that game, and it's not just one. It's the next shot, and it's the next shot. The way he creates shots.
Yeah.
The clutch, you know, outside shot, even though people talk about his form or whatever, you know, it doesn't look traditional. I mean, he's such a gamer, and he's really, really talented. And, you know, I don't care I think his dad has become too big of a story. I know it just happens because he's thrust himself into that and everybody's talking about it. But, I mean, it's just he's so, so good.
Okay, so let's get into the dad here, though.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the Suns, do you pay any attention or any care to the dad in this equation?
No, I don't.
Nothing.
I've talked to enough people who've kind of had contact with him who say while he talks a lot and he's involved, it's not bad or ill intended and all that stuff. I know he made that comment about wanting his son to play with the Clippers or something.
He said the Lakers, and he reiterated it again over the weekend. And I'm only bringing this up because is he the type of dad if he has control? Okay, we can all say, oh, no, the kid, we don't know that the kid is in control. And this is the type of dad that could say, you know what, go to China and you're going to get more money than you'll get in the United States. It's that type of dad that worries me, doesn't scare me off of him. But
right.
I think you just have to do, if you're the Suns, you can't just bring him here and say, you know what, after 3 years, well, it doesn't matter if he's a restricted free agent. You know, I get these people say, well, he's going to be restricted. To that dad may say, we don't care. We'll go sit out. We're going to go make money elsewhere.
Right.
That's my thing.
No, I understand what you're saying, but I honestly don't feel he's that guy. I think he's, you know, getting his 5, 10, 20 minutes of fame, enjoying kind of being the guy people are interviewing after the games. But my sense from people I talk to that once his son's in the league, it's going to be fine.
Right.
We'll see, though. We hear, you know, you never know.
Okay, what else has jumped out at you about the tournament? Any team, any storyline that you're really caught up in?
Well, I like how the Pac-12, just as I've watched so much of it, we're Pac-12, people aren't watching the games nationally. You wonder if people second-guess them, blah, blah, blah. I like how they've represented the conference in this tournament. I mean, even SC going down yesterday, they did better than people thought. Yeah, UCLA, obviously. But even Oregon, I mean, that was a tough game against Rhode Island. They were down. But bottom line, they're also without one of their players and key players for this tournament, and they're moving on to the Sweet 16. So that part has just been really fun for me to watch, and that the possibility is still there for West Coast teams to be a part of this Final Four, which I think would be a neat storyline.
USC returns all five of their starters next year.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got a transfer from Duke who's coming in. And people can get on Andy Enfield all they want. I saw USC when they played ASU, and I was not overly impressed at the time. But he had them peak at the right moment. UCLA is sitting there now with Steve Alford not wanting to talk about the Indiana job that's out there.
Right.
And whenever you do the denial, no denial, denial, it makes you think, okay, the minute that this is done, that he's out of here, we could have a real seismic shift within the conference. And I think your point on Boucher being out at Oregon is true. That, and then you throw Gonzaga in there because I count West Coast basketball as total.
Sure.
I think the West Coast has represented itself very, very well. And, you know, a conference like the ACC, just go back to football. You know, you guys aren't hanging around here right now. You know, don't tell me how great you are.
Exactly. And just hearing sort of national conversations about these teams, you know, everyone knows Mark Few's had a great program there, but I don't know how many people actually watch Gonzaga very much. So, you know, and even St. Mary's, I mean, I thought they represented themselves well in this. So that league is getting a little bit of attention. Yeah, it's been fun just to sort of hear the national conversation about these teams on the West Coast, because we see them all the time, but a lot of other people aren't.
Eric Bledsoe being shut down by the Suns. Do you have a problem with this?
Boy, this has been a tough one. I mean, the only problem I have with it, Brad, is if there is a communication problem with it. You know, I think teams can make that decision, and that's fine. But if there's been one, I think, challenge that McDonough has had a little bit, and maybe it's not from him, but there have been players who left here who did not feel like the communication was right. Like, things were happening to them they didn't expect. They were felt like they were misled. You know, you never know the true story, but I don't know. I'm not sensing that the communication on that whole end of it was on the money. So that, to me, that's the only concern, because then you have players unhappy. I don't mind the actual process if sort of everybody's discussed it. You know what I mean?
Sure. Sure. I just think Bledsoe's going to leave here when his contract's up. He's just another one in a line of guys that's biding their time in Phoenix, and he'll go to a big market.
We've seen it happen a lot.
No. I mean, I just think it's obvious that the people, they're like, oh, no, you can never trade Bledsoe. No. The history is repeating itself. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over. So
exactly.
All right. See you later. Thanks.
All right, Brad.
Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central Sports columnist. Steve Lapis is next. CBS analyst was there courtside for both of U of A's games. What does he think of the Wildcat chances? What does he think of market and stock, Sean Miller's coaching, and much, much more? I'm Brad Sussmat. So Arizona's road now to San Jose. Brad Sussmat, Sports 360 AZ. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Over on the football side, our football show on Fox Sports will be tomorrow night and Wednesday and Thursday nights as well, with 14 airings there on Fox Sports Arizona. Steve Lapis is promised now with us, the CBS Sports college basketball analyst. He saw and did the analysis on both U of A games up in Salt Lake City. He will be doing the Division II championship games in Sioux Falls, South Dakota this weekend, as well as a hoopaholic, as I like to say. We love this, having the coach on for a couple of minutes. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing great, Brad. How's it going?
Doing great, as expected, with U of A making it through the first round and now going on. We have the expectation out here that they should be playing in Glendale here a week from now, that we're going to be talking about a Final Four team. Am I right on that? Do you see that as I do?
I definitely see it as a distinct possibility. Now, that Gonzaga team, obviously they got to get through this game against Xavier, which I think they will.
Mm-hmm.
But this Gonzaga team is going to be tough. That's going to be a heck of a game. I think that'll be one of the best games of the tournament if that evolves, if that happens. But I love Arizona. They are a terrific two-way team. And, you know, I've known Sean for a long time. He's a great coach. And the thing I like about Arizona, there's a lot of things I like. One of the things I really like about them is the fact that they are a really good two-speed team. You know, they played against North Dakota. Their goal was to play as fast as they could in that game. Then they go the next 2 days later and they play against the slowest playing team in the country in St. Mary's. And they adapt very well to playing at different speeds. And I think in the NCAA tournament, that really helps you out. So that's one of the – there's a lot of things I love about them, but that's one of them.
Steve Lapis with us. Okay, so if you talked about the roster top to bottom, give me a player that coming into the tournament, you're like, okay, I've seen a little bit of this guy on U of A, but I didn't really know he was all that. You got a player?
I would probably say Raleigh Alkins. And don't get me wrong, I've had Arizona three times basically in the last 2.5 weeks because I had him in the game at Arizona State.
Yeah.
And not that I wasn't impressed with Raleigh Alkins, but I'm really impressed with him. He is a really talented kid. Now, he did hurt his finger, and hopefully he's okay. He had him taped together in the second half, and I don't know how that's going to affect his shooting. I don't think he made a jump shot once he had hurt his finger. But, you know, getting him taped right there at the game, and as opposed to having, you know, a week or 10 days to get used to it, is a big difference. But I think he plays well beyond his years. He drives it. He can shoot threes. He's strong as could be. And very poised. So I really, really think, I mean, he's going to be another star at Arizona, but he's not far away now.
Mm. You know, Steve, we have the NBA team out here that's not doing much this season, and they're looking at being in the lottery once again and potentially a high lottery pick. I don't know if they're going to be in a position to take Alonzo Ball or Markelle Fultz, but they might be in a position to look at Lauri Markkanen, assuming he comes out. Do they get Markkanen enough touches? Does U of A get the ball to him enough on the offensive end, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, I think what's happened, too, with him lately is, you know, I talked about this with Sean, that, you know, in the beginning of the year, he was really just a jump shooter. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, they have trying to get him kind of in and out. And I think getting him in and out is going to help him in terms of not being in one place all the time where people know where he is. And I think it has been an adjustment period for that. But I think he gets enough touches. I mean, look at this team that he's on. I mean, there's just so many weapons. You know, Trier is a weapon. Alkins is a weapon. Kadeem Allen can do so many things. And it's not like a guy like Ristich is not a good player. You know, yeah, he's not marketing, but he's pretty good too. So I think the balance of this team is one of the great things about it. But I will say this. It's a balanced team. But I think when push comes to shove, it's going to be Trier and Markkanen. And I think that's what I like also. I don't like teams that are totally balanced, and you don't know where they're going when they need a basket.
If you just,
I think we know that Trier and Markkanen is where they're going when they need a basket.
If you're just talking about Markkanen's game, what jumps out at you about him?
So skilled. I mean, he's 7 feet. He could put the ball down on the floor like he's a guard. He could take the ball to the basket. It's not like he's a catch and shoot guy or a post up guy. He can catch the ball at the foul line, top of the key, and take somebody off the dribble with a couple of bounces. So when I see a 7 foot guy, it's one thing nowadays. You see 7 foot guys that can shoot a three. You see 7 foot guys. Obviously, we've been seeing that for 50 years in the post, being able to do something. But you don't see 7 foot guys able to put the ball on the floor for three or four dribbles and do something. And I think if you ask me what makes him special, it's all those things. But the ability to put the ball on the floor, I think, is extra special.
Project him to the next level, Steve. What do you see out of him? A lot of people say that's Dirk.
Porzingis? Dirk?
No. Yeah.
I think more Porzingis-like if I had to pick one guy.
Okay.
Because I think that, not that Dirk doesn't play out on the perimeter, but I think that, you know, I think I look at Dirk as a 4-5 man or a 5-4, and I look at this kid as a 4-3 man. So I'm looking at him a little more Porzingis-like.
Interesting. You look at Xavier, the matchup on Thursday night. What should U of A fans expect?
Well, I mean, obviously the Xavier team has been a big surprise. I mean, their best player got hurt halfway through the season, and here they are in the Sweet 16. It's almost like a, you know, when you think about Xavier, it's like a rite of passage. They're going to be in the Sweet 16. It's unbelievable. And it's unbelievable what they did to Florida State. Completely decimated them. I mean, so, but this team scoring-wise, and they lost Miles Davis also, who left the team in January. So, I mean, they lost two of their best players, and still here they are at the Sweet 16. Trevon Blewett is a really good player, a 6'6", small forward type. Not a great shooter, but a terrific slasher. J.P. McCure is a terrific three-point shooter. Inside, they got a bunch of guys that just work as hard as they possibly can. But, you know, you would think that Arizona has a tremendous advantage against this team in the lane. And I think there's going to be a lot of teams that are going to have it against. But I think that's where they're going to really hurt Xavier is inside.
Hey, Steve, before you get out of here, if you were to look at the remaining 16 teams, if you were to reseed it, where would you reseed U of A?
Well, that's a good question.
I mean, Carolina would be up top. Carolina, Kansas. I mean,
Carolina, Kansas would probably be. I would probably put those one and two, even though I wouldn't have had Kansas there at the start of the summer. I'd probably have them three or four. Them or Gonzaga. Mm-hmm. One would be three, and one would be four. Yeah. UCLA's right there too. You know, that's a hard. It's a hard question. I would say three or four.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right there too. I'm looking at Kansas and Carolina and the depth there, but
I'll be honest with you, I'm not a big Kansas guy.
Yeah,
because Kansas doesn't have the thing that Kansas doesn't have that Carolina has, that Arizona has, that Gonzaga has, that UCLA has: quality height, quality size. Mm-hmm. Kansas does not have that. And I think that's going to end up biting them in the end.
Hey, appreciate the insight and time, Steve. Thanks.
No problem. Take care.
Steve Lapis there with CBS Sports. Good stuff. Division II championship games, Sioux Falls, South Dakota this weekend. He did both U of A games in the weekend over in Salt Lake City. Appreciate his time. Good stuff. Tomorrow we're going to have Lee Steinberg with us, the noted sports attorney. We're going to switch gears and do some football stuff. He's in a position with his quarterbacks that the Cardinals should be looking that way. And I also want to talk to him about Lonzo Ball and his dad. We're going to get into that with Lee Steinberg. That'll be tomorrow. We're going to have David Hines with us tomorrow, too. He's just named the new executive director of the AIA. This is one of those things for anybody who has got kids coming through high school. Doesn't matter if they're second graders right now. This is going to be the guy that determines the future. He's going to be the leadership now, the AIA, for years to come. And we'll talk with him a little bit, too, on tomorrow's show about football and the concussion issue and some of the other things for both boys and girls. So we do that as well. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Jared Nielsen, our chairman of the board. Eric Sorensen, senior executive vice president of everything. Thanks for being with us.